Welcome to this Thursday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. We are glad that you are with us. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Coming up in just a bit, Prairie Public's Todd McDonald reports from North Dakota border towns where business remains steady despite reports of declining cross-border traffic. Historian Dr. Tom Ezern shares a Plainsfolk essay on the prairie's duck hunting traditions, and we'll wrap up the show a bit later with a visit to the North Dakota Gateway to Science, where fall events prove that STEM really is for all ages. Welcome to Main Street. I'm Craig Blumenschein, and we are in Lisbon, North Dakota, where there's a movie theater that's more than a century old and still going strong. The Lisbon Historic Scenic Theater has been lighting up Main Street since 1911, claims to be the oldest continually operating movie theater in the United States. From silent films with live piano accompaniment to first-run digital blockbusters, it's weathered world wars, recessions, and even the rise of streaming, thanks to its generations of devoted locals and owners who simply couldn't let it fade to black. Today, we are inside the Scenic to explore the history, the community that saved it, and its next act under new leadership. We'll visit with Charlene Rawson in just a moment, but with me now is Joe Stoltz. Joe, you've been here not quite a year, is that right?
Yeah, we literally took over in May, so yep.
So what makes this so special to you, and how did you feel when you first saw the theater?
I love history, and this was part of keeping it alive. And when the opportunity came, it was something that we felt that we needed to jump on and move forward on. And keeping history alive is so important. And having something of this nature is so important.
How did you first get involved?
Seeing a for sale sign in the front.
You literally walked by.
Yep.
And you saw that it was for sale.
Yeah, there was a discussion. And with my daily job as the Lisbon Civic and Commerce Executive Director, there was much discussion about it and the importance of keeping it alive and vibrant within our community.
So the Scenic opened in 1911.
Yes.
Do you think about that when we're sitting here inside the theater looking at this beautifully modern, the lighting system is awesome, the sound system is awesome. People were, mm-hmm. right where you and I are, mm-hmm. more than 100 years ago.
Right. I do think about it just because I know the ins and outs and I get to see what they saw and experience. Like, I get to see the original curtains. I get to see behind the screen. I get to see the staircase that goes to the basement. I get to see the original boiler system. I see that stuff. I don't think the general public, when they come in and sit in here, realize the historic nature.
But it's ADA compliant, fully accessible, and it's everything you would expect to see, I think, in a modern theater.
It is. And the thing is, in Lisbon, it's way cheaper than going to Fargo or any other large city. So, yep.
How do you arrange your schedule? You have different times of the year when people aren't at the lake, so to speak, and during when it's really cold outside.
Right. We have found from the previous owners a pretty good schedule. They have set it so that Memorial Day to Labor Day, we don't run weekends. It becomes a ghost town in town. So people being gone. So we set it so that we do Monday, Tuesday, Thursday during Memorial Day to Labor Day. And then after Labor Day, when kids come back, running weekends. But we are finding that matinees, later matinees on Sundays, Saturdays and Sundays are good, and earlier in the evenings are good.
Surprising to me that there have just been a handful of owners. In fact, you can still count them on one hand.
Correct.
Give me the history.
So I'm not as well versed in the history as I probably should be. So there's supposed to be five we're the fifth owners, I believe. So that to me is crazy. If you do the math, the owners in over 114 years, that's a long time to only have five owners.
This is a place that doesn't just show movies. It's so much more than that, I've learned. This is a community center.
Essentially, yes.
A birthday party last night.
Right.
School folks come, veterans come.
Right.
How do you organize the schedule that evolves around being a part of a community?
There's a lot of mass chaos. There's a lot of volunteers. None of us are paid. Not one single person that comes in here is paid. So we're very blessed that we have a lot of people that walk in off the street and they say, oh, if you need help, let us know.
So if I come and order popcorn,
correct,
a volunteer is serving me.
Yeah, it's probably one of us at this moment in time. But we do have a lot of people that are very willing to come in. And the previous owners, Al and Betty, their group were all volunteers. They said it was their family. They became family to them. And I think that's a big thing. Small town, it is family. You get together, you see a movie, you work with your people, but it's not work. It's fun. You get to talk to them. They do become family.
What other kinds of events are connected then to the theater?
Well, we have our next large event is called Ha Ha Halloween and Harmony. That's on October 25th. We have a big promotional event coming up, which is comedians, live music, social hours, costume contest with giveaways. I mean, that is huge for us. We have, I'm trying to think, with the birthday parties coming up, we have the vets homes coming in, we've got Christmas parties coming up, full movie rental theaters for private parties. We've got some community forums coming up, just a whole bunch of coordination happening.
You have groups from Fargo,
yep,
that come to the Scenic.
We do.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, so through the word of social media and putting it out there and having connections, we've had groups reach out to us, and being ADA compliant, it's been wonderful to have them reach out and ask us if we would be willing to take them in, because their schedules are tight or it's not something that other theaters, even in the FM area, would be willing to do. Being a one screen, we can do that. And we wanted to do things. Being a nonprofit run movie theater, these are the things we want to do.
The Scenic has continued to be a thing in this world of streaming.
Right.
When people come here, what are they gaining from being here instead of just staying and streaming a movie at home?
Personally, I don't stream at home myself. So it's hard for me to say, but you don't get the experience the kids don't get the experience. If the kid doesn't get to come in and sit in a movie theater and get to have the box candy or the famous popcorn, and which we're known for here. I mean, we sell popcorn to go all the time. You're not getting to see what it was like for those people prior. So kids don't understand. It's like the old rotary phone. They don't understand what it would be like if the world was just looking at a screen on their phone or at home.
What's next for the Scenic?
I envision bigger events. I envision bringing more. I would love to envision a new state-of-the-art, expansion. This is a 2D projection system, digital, that was put in 2014. I've written a couple grants to try to see if we can upgrade to potentially 4D so that experience can be here. The new stuff would be, lounge seats at some point. New movie theaters have the potential of having screens on the ceiling. You never know where you need to go, but if we want to do another 114 plus years, we're going to have to do something.
Before we visit with Charlene, who is part of the ownership, I want to ask you about the Happy Days event that was happening this summer when the tornadoes hit.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
So Lisbon, North Dakota has a event that we normally do. It's supposed to be the third weekend in June, which usually falls on Father's Day. This year, somehow it got changed to Father's Day weekend. There's confusion. We don't compete with another local town. And so we ended up having to do 8 days. So we ran it 2 weekends. Being the my day job being executive coordinator for Civic and Commerce, that was a priority for me to make sure people were safe. And that was my job. That was my event. And so when we received the call from state radio and I had to make the decision as I was monitoring it and I was in a position to see what was formulating, we called it and we opened the movie theater because we had access to it and said, and asked people to please come to the movie theater, being the safest location.
No windows, brick
right
face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the main thing. We wanted people to be safe and be inside if it potentially would come towards us.
What happened after when you learned what happened just a few miles away in Enderlin?
That 4-mile difference made a huge difference. We went into, you know, helping our sister community. And that, even though we were in the middle of what should have been technically our happy days, our community days, our Civic and Commerce Board stepped up, our community stepped up, our local businesses stepped up, and we delivered water and food that with no power and no electricity over there, we stepped up during our days. We still kept going forward within our community, but we stepped up to help them. And in turn, they're helping us back by coming to the movie theater and they see that we have to help each other.
Joel Stoltz, it's been a pleasure. We're going to now visit with Charlene.
Thank you.
Charlene Rawson now joins us. Charlene, how did you become involved in the historic theater here in Lisbon?
Well, earlier this year, I became president of the Civic and Commerce, but I think Joe and I have always pretty much... Joe's like, she's kind of my best friend, and we brainstorm a lot together. But buying this theater was completely Joe's vision. I give her complete props for it. She's the one that noticed it was for sale. She's the one that thought it would be a tragedy if it closed.
So she knocked on your door, said...
She didn't have to knock, because we're always together.
Oh, okay, but you had to make a decision to buy the place.
Well, originally, one of our other board members from Civic and Commerce was thinking of buying it, and then at the last minute, that didn't work out, and I... To be perfectly honest, I figured it was a good use of my retirement fund. So I said, well, I called up my guy at Edward Jones and said, hey, can you take $70,000 out of my account and put it in my, I'm going to buy a theater. And he thought I was crazy, but he didn't say so. But my feeling about, I have a deep feeling about the fact that communities, rural communities are so stressed after COVID. Amazon, everybody started buying stuff from Amazon, and it's really, it's just so much, people just like to go to Fargo, and I said, you just need to maintain anything that is your sense of, that maintains your sense of place for a community. The other thing I do in the communities, I'm on the parks board, we also have an outstanding park. And this was I would say that this is the other major amenity that we had going for us that really serves the community, especially in the winter when people just really shouldn't be out traveling any more than necessary. The theater is just a really important part of the Lisbon's sense of who they are. And then Al gave me the tour, and I had never been in it.
Al's the previous owner.
Al Michaels, who owned it for 24 years, fully restored it from... I've heard some horror stories about what it was like before Al bought it.
It's beautiful now.
It's gorgeous. Yeah. Well, he actually took it back to the original, the paint, the way that the walls are painted, the Art Deco style was, he restored all of that. He found the original wall sconces underneath the building in the storage area under the building, and they were broken. And
they look brand new.
He rebuilt them, fully restored them. I never really appreciated them until I was in here with the lights on, because I'd just been in here for movies, and so it's dark, so you don't really realize what a wonderful job he did restoring it. He replaced all the old seating. The old seating is under the building still. And it's very comfortable and, you know, just a nice space to see a movie. And it's a totally different experience. I do stream movies at home, but it's a totally different experience when you're in the theater. I mean, you really, you can't turn it off and go to the bathroom or get a drink or whatever. You stay in the experience of the movie. And anyway.
The sense of community is
too. The sense of community, I just could not allow it to go dark.
What have you thought about when you realize this place was open during the recession? It was open during World War II. It was open through the Cold War and all of the things that have happened to our country and to our state, and it's endured. What goes through your mind?
I don't think I was that focused on the history. I was really focused on the community's need for it. And I'm dying. Al has this comprehensive book of a history of it. I'm dying to see it because I know that I would go cover to cover on it once I saw it. But I guess the feeling of it really does touch my heart that something could endure that long and be a part of a community of only 2,500 people. I mean, it's so hard to, but we have such a wonderful quality of life here. I grew up in the cities. I've grown up on an urban environment, and to come here and be in a community where people pull together. There was a tornado probably 15 years ago. My sister told me a story about a tornado that came through town. It came up the riverbed, jumped out of the riverbed over on the other side of the tracks and just started shearing off the trees. She said, and at 8 o'clock in the morning, you heard everybody who had a chainsaw fire it up. And if they didn't have a tree down in their own yard, they went and helped a neighbor. And by noon, by 12 o'clock, it was all cleaned up. That sense of community just touches my heart. And this theater is part of it. And the other thing I was really struck by was the stage. Was I felt like this was one of the most underutilized buildings. We have the Lisbon Opera House, which does a lot of stage shows and stuff, but we have a stage here, and it's just a more intimate environment. And I just felt like there was just so much more you could do with it. And Joe's got, my God, she knows everybody. She's got more connections than your basic motherboard. No, she just knows everybody. It's kind of amazing. I feel like I'm supporting her vision.
Charlene, as we wrap things up, mm-hmm. you get to write the Hallmark card now that invites people to come. What would you tell them that they may not know?
Mm. There's no place like a small town for home.
My guests today have been Joel Stoltz and Charlene Rawson, both of whom gathered together to purchase the historic Scenic Theater in Lisbon. Thank you both for joining us today on Main Street.
No, thank you for having us.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. While national reports say traffic at the U.S.-Canada border is down by as much as 30%, some small towns in North Dakota aren't feeling the pinch.
Believe it or not, with the media saying that the traffic's down 30 to 33%, we don't see it. Our sales tax has not taken a dip. That's our main income, is sales tax through like gas stations and stuff like that. It has not affected us.
Mike Fitzgerald is mayor of Pembina, North Dakota. His community is 2 miles south of the international border and 5 miles from Emerson, Manitoba. When I visited with Mayor Fitzgerald, he was breathing a sigh of relief after seeing a 3-day traffic jam of semis looking to cross the border.
That line of trucks was from the Canadian border all the way down to the Pembina Bridge. It was insane, the amount of truck traffic that was stuck here in Pembina.
And that was because of a computer issue.
Yeah, computer issue on the Canadian side, and they were able to process the paperwork or the manifest for the trucks, and it was 3 days. People were stuck here for 2 days straight.
Fitzgerald says despite the complications, he's continuing to see Canadian visitors in Pembina and vice versa.
I know there's a couple individuals that go up north into Emerson right there and grab groceries on the Canadian side too.
Fitzgerald says for his community of about 500 people, the quiet pace of small town North Dakota can seem a world away from the rest of the nation. but at the same time, it's welcome.
I work at the port of entry for a subcontract out there, and there's not much discussion on politics and tariffs or anything like that. Everybody just wants to do their thing and go on about their business.
Okay. Is that kind of the rule of thumb for your town too?
Yep. Politics are a sore subject. I wouldn't say sore subject, but they're a sensitive subject. Like a very sensitive subject. Some people are very in tune with their Republican Party or their Democratic Party. Me personally, I don't have a side. So just do what's right. Just do what's right.
35 miles to the west is the also historic community of Walhalla. While Pembina is recognized for being the first founded community in North Dakota in 1843, Walhalla follows closely, being founded in 1845. Much like Pembina, Walhalla is a direct neighbor to Manitoba, positioned 5 miles from the international line and a 20-mile drive from the community of Winkler, Manitoba. Michael Cook is auditor for the city of Walhalla. He says Pembina is definitely the port of entry for Canadian truck traffic. At the same time, being on the Pembina River and sitting on the doorstep of the Pembina Gorge, his community has its own generator of traffic.
Our Riverside Campground here is a big attraction for a lot of Canadian tourists. It's packed pretty much all summer, and pretty much all of them are Canadians that spend some time there. And actually, speak on that too, Clausen's out of Winkler, they bought a property in town here, and they're opening up a new business, Wentworth Ag. So it's going to be selling retail grain handling equipment. So,
but in terms of Canadian traffic?
You know, I've noticed here, and like I would agree with the mayor said, you know, haven't noticed. I've only been here since end of May 2024, but I don't really notice a sales tax impact or decrease or anything like that. And like I said, I live right next to the park, and there's a lot of camper traffic that comes through there with Manitoba plates on.
Cook also suggested I check with the grocery store two doors down. It was there I met Robin Jerome. She was busy counting money from a cash register when we talked.
We have maybe just a little bit fewer people coming from Canada than we have in the past, but not, I mean, we still have people that come down for like just the random thing that they can't find up in Winkler or whatever, and if that's what you're asking, if that's the type of thing you mean, yeah. So, I mean, we still have people coming in for certain kinds of chips or certain kinds of ice cream or just random things like that.
Jerome says there may also be an inverse to the traffic issue, and that would come in the area of Americans going into Canada.
I have not been up that way since COVID, honestly. So I know there's quite a few people that haven't really started going back, that I know that used to go and just have not gotten back up there since.
Yeah.
The three individuals I had the chance to speak with did have one common idea about the decline. And that while it may be sidestepping the small border communities, it likely has more of a presence in tourism traffic for larger cities like Grand Forks and Fargo. For Prairie Public, I'm Todd McDonald.
That's Prairie Public's news reporter, Todd McDonald, visiting border communities where the international line may divide two nations, but not the neighbors who share it. Still ahead on this Thursday's Main Street, historian Dr. Tom Easern shares a Plainsfolk essay on the prairie's duck hunting traditions. And we'll wrap up the show today with a visit to the North Dakota Gateway to Science, where fall events prove that STEM really is for all ages. That's still ahead on Main Street. Stay with us.
Extra, extra, read all about it. Gather around, everybody.
It's Thursday. That news welcomes Dave Thompson, our director of news here at Prairie Public. Dave, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Craig. How are you?
I'm doing okay, Dave. It's been a couple of weeks. We've had some changes to our schedule that's kind of preempted us from getting together, but we are back, and boy, there's sure a lot of news to talk about.
Some very interesting news for sure.
The Bank of North Dakota's announcement that local banks and credit unions very soon will be able to provide very low interest loans to furloughed federal employees through a special relief program.
Yeah, it's basically called the Furloughed Federal Employees Relief Program, as you mentioned. And what they're doing is they're basically The Bank of North Dakota has been working with local banks and credit unions, and they're going to provide short-term low-interest loans to local government, federal government employees and members of the armed services that are stationed in North Dakota because they're not being paid during the furlough. And they're saying, okay, if you can prove it, we'll give you this loan and you can pay it back at a 2% interest. So there might be a pretty good demand for that if you're thinking about, you know, the Minot and Grand Forks Air Force bases, the installation in Fargo with the National Guard, and also some of the other, you know, employees of federal government like USDA who basically are out of a job right now. They're actually furloughed. They're not completely fired, but they're furloughed.
I heard your discussion with the Grand Forks mayor, and he's thrilled about this.
He absolutely is thrilled about that because, of course, Grand Forks, they have a great base up there, and a lot of people live in town, so it's really important to Grand Forks' economy. And he said there was some concern, you know, if they shut down and they won't be spending money, maybe they can, you know, get these low-interest loans and spend some money on certain things that would be essentials, perhaps.
And certainly will help the servicemen and women who are in Grand Forks and in Minot as well. So that's great news. But, Dave, there are other impacts that are now starting to, I guess, surface because of the federal shutdown and especially to farmers.
Right. You talk about USDA being shut down. There's been some talk about having some help to soybean and corn farmers because of, you know, the lack of shipments. China is buying no soybeans right now, zero. They're buying their soybeans from Brazil because of the tariffs. So there's been efforts that have been talked about in Congress to get some kind of relief program to farmers through USDA. But the trouble is, you might approve it, but USDA is shut down because the offices are shut.
That'll be one to follow because now it's harvest time and these dollars to farmers will be so, so important.
Absolutely. And you feel bad for the soybean farmers because a lot of what they depend on are foreign shipments.
Yep. We have some in our family and they're feeling the pinch for sure. So I hope this can run forward. Dave, let's turn the page to Kirsten Basler, who is now going to Washington, D.C. She, of course, is North Dakota's current superintendent of public instruction. First, Dave, does she have a last day? And next, who's next?
Here's why she doesn't have a last day. The shutdown. She can't get to Washington, D.C. to be sworn in and then to have an office to go to. So she'll wait, you know, as they work through the whole thing with the government shutdown. So at this point, there's rampant speculation about who might replace her. There have been a few names that have been surfacing, but nothing concrete yet. But what is interesting, and Craig, I should really point this, and I think I will in a subsequent story. Whoever replaces Kirsten Basler will have to run in 2026, and then again in 2028, because that's the way it is. You are hired as a temporary replacement, and then you have to run in the next election, and she is scheduled to run again in 2028.
And, of course, the initial appointment then is up to and solely up to Governor Armstrong.
That is absolutely correct. He will make the appointment, and it's a temporary appointment until there's an election.
Dave, you were at a meeting when the Bank of North Dakota launched the state's first stablecoin, known as Rough Rider Coin. All right, Dave, I need a lesson here. What is a stable coin? I have a feeling it may have something to do with cryptocurrency.
Well, it is cybercurrency. They're not calling it cryptocurrency, but they're calling it cybercurrency. And what will happen right now is they're rolling it out this way, that they'll use that to facilitate transfers between banks. You know, it costs banks a lot if you do wire transfers. But now you can use these coins and the wallets to make them fast and cheap. So that's where it's going to start. But eventually they're thinking that we as consumers are going to be able to use these coins, you know, in our normal transactions. Instead of taking out dollar bills, you might be able to use these coins. So it's interesting as North Dakota's banking community, the credit unions, the banks, the Bank of North Dakota, are rolling it out because they want to embrace the new technology.
My story about cryptocurrency, Dave, is a friend gave me $5 worth of Bitcoin for Christmas I would say maybe now about 7 or 8 years ago, which is also now about 4 or 5 phones ago. I have no idea how to get into that digital wallet I created. I'm probably a millionaire and don't even know it, Dave. So we'll see how this works.
Yeah, it's not easy. It's not easy to navigate because it kind of goes against the way we were taught and the way we've been using money and currency for years. Yes.
All right, Dave. Speaking of other things that want to talk about, a second solar project has now been approved in North Dakota, but the first one hasn't even been built yet. What's the latest there?
Okay, the latest is the first one was Harmony Solar. That's in Cass County, and that has not been built. It's been on hold for a while. The second one is going to be in Richland County, and Otter Tail Power Company is going to build that one. And they're going to build it because the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission and the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission, the equivalent of our PSC here in North Dakota, they have said that they need to have solar as part of their integrated resource plan. North Dakota has not approved it, so North Dakota is not going to require them to use solar power in North Dakota, but they're going to build this solar facility and export the power to Minnesota and South Dakota, which is very interesting.
Dave, let's go back to the topic of schools. Schools and no cell phones. We are starting to hear now how it's going over in our schools here in North Dakota. What do you know?
Well, a lot of schools say they like it because, you know, these kids are now interacting between themselves. They're having conversations. And one teacher I did talk to say it's nice to hear chatter in the lunchroom because a lot of kids were on their phones and just doing that. Now they're talking to each other. So that has been, I think, a real positive on that. I think you're finding that in other schools as well. As the kids are getting used to, okay, I have to leave my cell phone in a pocket outside the classroom, and then I can pick it up after school, but they're allowing them to have more interactions between students.
I visited with an administrator here in the Horace area in the West Fargo School District, and the thought was, we should have done this earlier.
Right.
I didn't think it would go over this well. All right, Dave, state school boards talking about property tax caps and possibly renewing their push to lower the threshold for voter approval for bond issues.
Right.
Currently, it's 60%. Perhaps now they would like it to go to 50%.
50% plus one, yes. Absolutely.
One.
And, you know, the reason is that they put that high bar on it because the legislature has felt that should have a high bar because you're building buildings and you're not necessarily putting the money into the classroom, but you're building classrooms. But they say with the property tax caps, you know, it makes it that much harder to get the votes for, you know, a 60%. So they're saying maybe we ought to look at something 50% plus one. And then they might want to try to revisit or try to tweak the property tax caps in the next legislative session. That's being discussed at the North Dakota School Boards Association meeting in Bismarck this week.
Dave Thompson, we're back on our schedule of reviewing the news on Thursdays here on Main Street. Dave, it's great to hear your voice again.
Thank you, Craig. News too.
Gather around, everybody.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by LiveWire, a provider of live event audio, video, lighting, staging, and streaming services for events, conferences, and meetings across the Prairie region and around the country. More information at livewirenow.com.
This is Main Street. I'm Craig Blumenschein, and in this Plainsfolk essay written and read by historian Tom Ezern, Tom reflects on the folk culture of waterfowl hunting in North Dakota, from the days when townsmen took to the marshes for sport to how these traditions have evolved on the modern prairie.
When I came to North Dakota from another prairie state in 1992, many things seemed familiar, others not so much. For one thing, as the owner of an enthusiastic Labrador retriever, I found local habits of waterfowl hunting perplexing. I remember heading out for opening day at a nearby waterfowl production area, setting decoys, and rather quickly taking a limit of teal, the usual thing for opening day here, as it turns out, collecting my gear and getting out in search of breakfast, I saw many other hunters at Marsh's Edge, but none of them had any decoys out. They were all standing around just waiting for a duck to fly over, which was why I was done hunting, I suppose, and they were still standing around. 1993, of course, marked the beginning of a more humid regime in this part of the plains, a remarkable expansion of wetlands, and huge waterfowl population gains. Waterfowling has elevated and mainly taken to the fields in pursuit of mallards and honkers. Still, as someone who had grown up with pit blinds and elaborate spreads, I remained curious about the folk culture of waterfowling here, thinking back to the settler society of the late 1800s. After a little research, I can describe it to you. Archaeologists say that indigenous peoples here made only limited use of waterfowl. There were easier sources of protein around, I guess. The same largely goes for our homesteading forebears. I find surprisingly scant evidence of waterfowl hunting or consumption among them. Instead, there arose a townsman's culture of duck hunting, symbolized by this note in the Fargo Argus in August 1881. Dr. J. Robinson, with his famous dogs, made a haul of some very fine ducks while hunting yesterday, which he brought to the Argus. Thus, a middle-class professional from town had ventured into the countryside, shot some ducks, and brought the bag back to town to share with his neighbors there. Or consider this report from Minto in 1883. Oscar Smith, one of Minto's old-timers, accompanied by Mr. Eddy of Fargo, arrived in town Tuesday last. They proceeded on Wednesday to Salt Lake, where they will spend a week or two in goose and duck hunting. Commonly, townsmen hooked up with country folk for better hunting. In this case, I suspect Mr. Eddy of Fargo footed the bill for railroad passage to Kidder County to hunt Salt Lake. It was in the mid-1880s this town-based waterfowling culture blossomed. As an editor in Grand Forks in 1884 declared, "Chicken and duck hunting are the sport of the day. Mr. John Ballerwich brought down 6 ducks at one shot. Beat that if you can." Both prairie chickens and waterfowl proliferated in the settlement environment, with croplands interspersed among prairie and wetlands. Mr. Ballerwich must have made his 6 bird shot by a sneak upon a sitting flock. I gather, however, that most hunting at this time was pass shooting, like I would observe a century later in 1992. I also gather there was a public impression of duck hunting that was tolerant, but not necessarily positive. As one reporter observed, Jay Helgeson went duck hunting Wednesday, but he left his game bag at home. So what was Mr. Helgeson doing out there in the country? Imaginations were active.
That was Plains Folk by NDSU Distinguished Professor of History Tom Ezern. You can find more essays at plainsfolk.com or on Prairie Public's website. And it's Thursday. We're back visiting with the great folks at North Dakota's Gateway to Science, which is a hands-on interactive science center in Bismarck. It offers engaging STEM exhibits, learning programs, camps, and outreach to educate us and inspire us, all of us, people of all ages. Hope Berdolsky, she's with us. She's a STEM education specialist at the North Dakota Gateway to Science. Hope, welcome back to Main Street.
Thank you so much for having me.
There are some hands-on STEM discovery events coming up at North Dakota Gateway to Science. Tell me about them.
Yes, we have some amazing events coming up throughout the month of October, but one specifically that I wanted to highlight because it is through an amazing grant that we received through AARP through a community challenge. And so our community challenge aspect was to increase digital literacy in people who are 50 plus. And so we are able to host 2 different workshops that are going to be hosted here on site for free of charge. And it is for anybody who is 50 plus to come learn about digital literacy in terms of online safety, learning more about scams and phishing, the background of what AI is and dispelling some myths that come with it. And we'll actually be able to answer any questions that people have as well. And so that one is happening on Tuesday, October 21st from 6:30 to 8 p.m., as well as December 9th from 6:30 to 8 p.m. And
so, any pre-registration needed, or can people just come?
Yeah. Yes. So we will have some pre-registration just so that we know if we need to have any extra devices to have people test things out. We have it ready to go, but that will be on our website under adult programs. And so all you have to do is register. It's a completely free event, but that way we know how many friends we'll have to join us.
There are other events on the calendar too. Let's go through them.
Yes. So on October 9th, so tonight, we have an event hosted through Visiting Scientists series, which is one of the things that we help facilitate in our community. And it is a group that has a wide range of people representing the science field. And so we have people from BSC, UMary, the North Dakota State Historical Society, as well as Gateway to Science. And we are bringing in a documentary called Counted Out, and it is to increase the awareness of math and how it is integrated into our society. And that will start at 6 p.m. hosted at BSC in the new building. And it is going to be such an amazing experience. And then we'll have some discussion points afterwards. With that, there is a pre-registration just to make sure we have enough snacks available for everyone. And that is going to be on our Facebook event. So if you go to Visiting Scientist Series on Facebook, you'll be able to register.
Well, before we move along, tell us exactly how to find the Gateway to Science.
To find Gateway to Science, we have a couple avenues. We have our website, which is www.gatewaytoscience.org. That's where you will find quite literally anything and everything you might need for Gateway to Science. We also have a Facebook page, which is North Dakota's Gateway to Science. And then we have an Instagram, which is Gateway to Science.
All right. More events on the calendar.
Yes. So like I said, October is a busy month. We had International Observe the Moon Night last week. We now on October 16th and 17th, as well as Halloween, are going to have mini camps that are meant for ages, or I should say grades, first through sixth grade. And that is a full day camp where kids get to come and hang out with us and learn all about STEM in a wide variety of activities. And so come hang out with us. It's on the days that BPS doesn't have school. And so if you have a kiddo that is grades one through six, we would love to have them join us. Every single camp is different, and it is even different from our summer camps as well. And so we have kids who come to every single mini camp, every single summer camp, and every single day is different for them to come and experience it.
And like I said in my open, it's not just for young kids, more events for some of us older folks coming in October.
Yeah. Yes, I'm so excited for our adult events. Our adult programs have kind of been my passion project over the last year. And so we have our AARP workshop happening on October 21st. Like I said, it's free, but we ask for pre-registration just so if we do need to provide any devices or have any extra handout materials, we'll have it ready for you. And with that, there is going to be so much opportunity to discuss and build community. And so it's something that I highly recommend anybody come and joining us. And then we also have our Gateway After Dark with Oscars, which is a mixology place here in town on October 27th. And it is called Spooky Spirits. And so we'll be doing molecular gastronomy, essentially what they do at Oscars with liquid nitrogen, dry ice, the process of spherification. They're also bringing their GyroVap, which is going to help show how they make non-alcoholic liquor. And we'll actually be able to test it too. And then to finish off the evening, there will be a cocktail / mocktail lab where you get to shake and make your own drink.
My guest is Hope Berdulski. She is the STEM education specialist. Thanks, Hope.
Thank you.
If you're listening to the 3 p.m. broadcast of Main Street, catch up on the news and stories from around the world, the nation, and here at home with All Things Considered. That's up next on Prairie Public. And if you're listening to us during the evening broadcast, keep it here for The Middle Live with host Jeremy Hobson.
This is Dakota Datebook for October 3rd. President Franklin D. Roosevelt placed the Great Depression at the top of his to-do list when he was inaugurated in 1933. He quickly took strong measures, creating government agencies to address economic problems and put the country back on a secure financial footing. As Europe fell once again into war, Roosevelt proclaimed that the United States would remain neutral. Nevertheless, he quietly began preparing for military involvement should it become necessary.
He declared a state of national emergency, increased the size of the National Guard, and in September of 1940, authorized the first peacetime draft. When Japan attacked Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941, the United States military was somewhat prepared for the conflict, thanks to Roosevelt's foresight. But the war effort wasn't the only challenge facing the country. Roosevelt was concerned that the war could undo the progress that had pulled Americans out of the depths of the Great Depression. On this date in 1942, Roosevelt established the Office of Economic Stabilization. This office wasn't intended to actively intervene in the economy. Instead, it was created to resolve disputes between agencies and establish policies on wages, salaries, prices, rents, and profits. The new department coordinated with the work of the Office of Price Administration and the National War Labor Board. North Dakota had suffered through the Depression along with the rest of the country, but also faced the added challenge of severe drought, which pushed many farmers into bankruptcy. According to one estimate, 70% of North Dakotans required public assistance. The state struggled through the Depression, leaving behind a trail of hardship and broken dreams. But a favorable turn in the weather in the early 1940s, combined with increased demand for agricultural products driven by the war, helped ease the pressure on North Dakotans and sparked a financial recovery. By 1942, the country was accustomed to President Roosevelt's strong hand in the economy. North Dakotans took support for the war effort seriously and did not object to a government agency regulating wages and controlling prices. The focus was on winning the war and supporting the nearly 60,000 North Dakotans who had signed up to serve in the armed forces. Today's Dakota Day Book was written by Dr. Carol Butcher. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
This is Bird Note. At first glance, many of North America's sparrows look pretty much the same, like small, drab-colored songbirds hanging out on the ground. But these little brown jobs can be a lot of fun to identify, if you know what to look for. Do you notice any interesting markings on its face? Maybe it has a bright white ring around its eye, like this field sparrow. Or maybe the bird has a solid black streak across its face, called an eyeline, like this chipping sparrow. Chipping sparrows also have a reddish-brown cap or crown. You may even spy sparrows with crown stripes, like white-throated sparrows. What about the sparrow's breast feathers? Field sparrows, chipping sparrows, and white-throated sparrows all have plain colored breasts. But many other species show a distinctive streaking pattern, like this song sparrow. In fact, figuring out if your sparrow is either streaky or not streaky is a great way to narrow down your species ID. Next time you spot a little brown job, see if you can make out some of its markings to help put a name to your friend in the sky. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
And that wraps up this Thursday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. We are deeply grateful that you spent time with us, and we are very grateful for all of those who pitched in earlier this week and supported our fall membership drive. Remember, you can still contribute to Prairie Public by going to our website at prairiepublic.org and clicking the Donate tab. Tomorrow at 3 p.m. Central, it's The Middle with Jeremy Hobson, and at 7 p.m., it's Science Friday with Ira Flato. From all of us here at Prairie Public, we hope you have a great North Dakota weekend, and we look forward to seeing you again Monday, right here on Main Street.